thankfully, your final, both in your section and the other sections, not towards the end of next week, so you've got a little time to review. Because remembering what happened with the 12B class last year, it wasn't so much that the final was tough, it's just that we spent, just like we did this quarter, so much time on molecular orbital theory and conrotatory and disrotatory and excited in ground states and aromaticity and all that at the end of the quarter, that when all of a sudden on the final there's synthesis problems and fill-in-the-blank problems that you haven't had in a little while, it was a very rude awakening for them, especially since I'm wondering if that quarter, the last day of class was Monday and they had their final Tuesday, something like that. So they weren't too happy. That would be my biggest suggestion, that is, since we have spent so much time on aromaticity and all that lately, and since it probably relatively makes sense, I'd put more of your focus of studying back into the earlier material from the quarter. Again, on synthesis, mechanism, fill-in-the-blank problems. The question was asked in the previous section, what's going to be the composition of the final as far as types of problems? Roughly, one quarter from the first exam, one quarter from the second exam, one quarter from the third exam, and a little less than a quarter on the diels, all the reaction, and the paracyclic reactions. So I'm telling you, you're going to have a question about the diels, all the reaction on the final, and you're going to have a question about conrotatory versus disrotatory, which also will therefore include a discussion of homolumo theory, all that. Those will be on the final. But let's go back to the beginning of the quarter. And let's just do this as an overview. The different types of nomenclature, because nomenclature is one of the early things that we started with. So we had nomenclature of alcohols. We did briefly some nomenclature of alkoxides. We reviewed nomenclature of alkenes. But then we focused on aldehydes and ketones, along with more recently covering benzene nomenclature. So alcohols were the first functional group that we started the quarter with, and we started with three ways to convert alcohols into leaving groups. So we had tosyl chloride, we had thionyl chloride, and we had PBr3. Remember that the main difference between these was stereochemical. So tosyl chloride does not cause inversion of stereochemistry when it reacts with an alcohol. But both thionyl chloride and PBr3 do. So if you want to convert an alcohol and then do an SN2 reaction, for example, overall tosyl chloride will mean an overall single inversion of stereochemistry, whereas for thionyl chloride and PBr3, since they themselves cause inversion, then when you do an SN2, it'll invert it back. After that, we talked about hydration and dehydration. We talked about oxidation. And remember, we had a discussion of PCC versus anything that had water. And that was sort of a lead into aldehydes and ketones. Because that was the first time that we talked about hydrates, which is one of the
decode mechanisms. And we'll come back to the others after we finish talking about alcohols. So we had hydration, dehydration. Under aldehydes and ketones, because we started talking about hydration, we then also talked about reactivity of aldehydes versus ketones.
And remember, the reason there's a difference in reactivity is, well, maybe partially due to sterics. Ketones have alkyl groups. Aldehydes at least have just at least one hydrogen on there. But the main difference is that alkyl groups provide stabilization of the delta positive through hyperconjugation. And if you lessen the delta positive on the carbonyl, you make the carbonyl less reactive.
Now let me think. Maybe there wasn't much else we did do with alcohols other than to make alkoxides. Where we had either sodium hydride or sodium metal, and with those alkoxides, we could then do Williamson ether synthesis.
Now let me do a little bit of development of aldehydes and ketones, but I know there's one thing we'll backtrack in just a moment, which is epoxides. But let's skip over just a moment.
See, we tackled PCC. Oh, okay. Why don't we just talk about epoxides? So, I don't think I required you to know the MCPBA mechanism, did I? For this quarter? Last quarter you had to know it, reviewed it this quarter. You still won't be asked about it then on this final because you already had it last quarter. You at least need to remember in terms of synthesis that to get to from an alkene to an epoxide, it could either be MCPBA or a 1-2 combination of bromine and water followed up by sodium hydride, which causes an intramolecular SN2. So those would be fill-in-the-blank type situations, not mechanism situations. You then, though, did have a discussion of cationic versus anionic ring opening. That looks like that led us up through exam one. So then we did focus more on aldehydes and ketones after that. So we had the different POD reactions, which were to make hydrates, acetals, ketals, the hemiacetals and hemiketals, imines, and enamines. Of course, we had a few other small functional groups that we've talked briefly about, like cyanohydrins, oximes, and hydrosomes. We had the different types of reduction, lithium aluminum hydride versus sodium borohydride. We had alkylation in the form of the Grignard reaction and the Wittig reaction. And once we started doing those alkylations, we then started talking about protecting groups, which there are still only two that we talked about this quarter. Dihydropyran and terpyl dimethylsilyl chloride. So back up to aldehydes and ketones, we do have the Wolf. I always forget if it's 1F or 2s. 2. Wolf-Kishner reduction. And remember, that only works for hydrazones. Okay, protecting group. And that was the end of synthesis, really. It was at that point we switched over and started talking about conjugation. Since you just had it on the lab exam, there's going to be no question about kinetic versus thermodynamic control. Benzene synthesis is going to be next quarter, because I didn't have the proper amount of time to develop that topic-wise this quarter. So, no synthesis related to benzene other than fill-in-the-blank style or mechanism, where I ask about nitration, sulfonation, halogenation, or Friedel-Crafts alkylation or acylation. That'll be the limit to which we do benzene synthesis. So no kinetic versus thermodynamic control, but we do have a molecular orbital description of the allyl system and butadiene. And that's where we first started talking about bonding versus non-bonding versus antibonding orbitals. You might or might not. I don't know. We've done a lot of them in the past, so maybe I'll stop asking about them temporarily. At least in this topic. That's for smog diagrams. And that would only be to draw a structure to prove to me which p orbitals, for example, are participating in something that's conjugated. Now, I won't ask you what the difference is, but we did review what hyperconjugation instead of conjugation is. I'm just looking at the notes, remembering that was a topic of discussion. There is one place where potentially, if I didn't ask in a quiz already, might put a smog diagram, and that's to ask about cumulated dienes, which, gesundheit, that would be a diene like this, where remember that the dot in the middle represents a carbon, and we write it this way sometimes, because otherwise it just looks like a big, long, double bond. Then that brings us to aromaticity. And so you need to know, when is something aromatic, non-aromatic, or anti-aromatic? We only drew the molecular orbital pictures for cyclobutadiene and benzene. But we talked about several examples.
Either because we want to talk about something, why it is aromatic, why it is anti-aromatic, why it distorts for some reason to avoid being anti-aromatic.
And so some of those examples included, again, cyclobutadiene. We had the cyclopentadienyl anion. We had the tropylium ion. We had pyridine, which was our example of something with a lone pair that doesn't delocalize. We had pyrrole, which is an example of something where the lone pair does delocalize. We had cyclooctatetraene, an example of a molecule that distorts to avoid anti-aromaticity. And we had this cyclic pentaene, which I use an example to show how sterics could cause distortion that would prevent aromaticity. Now from there, starting to approach the present day. Since you just had it, I'm not going to ask for the hydrogenation question on the final. Nor am I likely to ask you to explain how to draw a frost circle. But I'll put frost circle in here just to remind us that you, for your own benefit, might still need to draw one. To explain why something would be anti-aromatic, for example. But you won't have to answer the rules of how to draw a frost circle. This is all on the theory side of things. We do then have what bit of synthesis or mechanism that we do have. And again, that would be knowing the reagents, the mechanism for nitration, sulfonation, alkylation, acylation, and halogenation. Now, you still need to know what causes something to be an orthopair director versus meta, and you still need to know why something is an activator versus a deactivator. But I'm not going to ask exactly the same question again that what you had on exam 3. For example, we haven't had a question where I've just presented an array of molecules and asked which ones are orthopair directors, which ones are meta. Nor have we had the question of why are halogens orthopair directors but deactivators. I'm not saying that'll be on the final. I'm just pointing out that we haven't had those questions yet. Then the last bit that we have had are the paracyclic reactions, which in connection with that, that's where we got homolumo theory, which in connection to that, we talked about ground versus excited states. And the two examples that we talked about for paracyclic reactions were the formation of cyclic compounds by conrotatory or disrotatory motion of p orbitals. And then, of course, we talked about the Diels-Alder reaction, which in the case of the Diels-Alder reaction, we talked about needing to have the diene in the S-cis versus the S-trans configuration . And we talked about secondary orbital effects in whether something would be endo versus exo substituted. That, I believe, is a full list of topics for the final. Now, if I left some very prominent thing out that you know that if I reviewed the notes that I would come around to remembering, the type of thing that if someone asked about it right now that you'd elbow them and say, shh, you wouldn't remember. No, I'm going to go back and review. So I'm not saying this is the exclusive list, but these are the best hits from just briefly viewing over the notes for the quarter. Yes? The mechanism for what? For the Jones reagent. Did I never show an example of that in here? I'll write it up real quick. Because it really is just very closely related to the PCC mechanism. For Jones, what you could do is start with the chromium trioxide. And generally this is an aqueous acidic conditions. So you could show one of the, I guess they're called chrominyls, getting protonated. That can open up. Which then puts a positive charge on chromium, which is what could be attacked by an alcohol. So notice that at this point, everything looks the same as a PCC reaction. It's just that instead of having oh gosh, I keep getting that off the end there. So instead of O minus with a pyridine at the very, very end, we have just an OH group. But from here, other than that one structural difference, the mechanism would be identical to that of PCC. Other questions? Yes?
A compound like azeline, you always only draw one processor.
You always draw what? It would only be one frost circle, yes, because the question is, was what would we do for a frost circle for azulene? Well, since azulene is overall a circle with 10 atoms in it, if you look at the way I've drawn the double bonds now, circle with 10 atoms, it would be a decagon. Other questions? Yes. Nomenclatures for ethers and esters. We're not going to do the common nomenclature, the only type that we did discuss to any degree was that if you had a compound like this, four carbons and two carbons, you take the longer chain and make that the main chain. And then for the short chain,
You take whatever name you'd have, like methyl, ethyl, propyl, butyl, and just take the first portion of that, because we end up making what are called concatenated names, shortened names. So instead of saying methyl oxy or ethyl oxy, we say meth oxy, eth oxy, prop oxy, but oxy. So take the ane ending and just put oxy on it. So I'll say it like this. Ethane minus ane plus oxy gives us ethoxy. So this compound would be 1-ethoxybutane.
Other questions? Do you need to know the mechanism for every reaction that what? That you learned? Unless I didn't ever show you the mechanism for it. So with what time we have left, let me at least start going over exam 3. For those of you who weren't here at the very beginning of class, we did go over the answers to exam 3 in the other section. So on the website, instead of your page, if you go to the other page, I recommend you downloading their Friday lecture. The beginning of their lecture you've already heard because it was the answers, some of the answers to exam 2. And we are going to do some of the answers to exam 3 now, but in case we run out of time, that's a place you could go.
So let me pull up both versions of the exam. Because, as I think I told you all, on one exam it had questions that were the other sections. Quiz 3 questions. So your quiz 3 question, in fact, was about butadiene and cyclobutadiene, wasn't it? And that meant on your exam you had imidazole and then a 5-membered ring compound that you had questions about. So imidazole is this 5-member ring compound, and you were told that it appears to have 8 electrons, which might participate in the ring. And even though I didn't use this word, I was trying to say, well, that would make it look like it's anti-aromatic. But I tell you that it is aromatic, and it's easily synthesized and isolated. So you're asked to draw a smog diagram to explain why it is actually aromatic. Well, what is the hybridization of every atom on the ring? sp2, because even the nitrogen that looks like it's sp3, it's sp2 because that lone pair in real life, even if it were just on a plain amine, that lone pair would be bouncing back and forth between two different directions. And as it bounces back and forth, if you imagine it being in the middle, which it wouldn't be in the middle of the nucleus, but it's as if there's a p orbital there. Well, if there was, then there's the other p orbitals that are the part of the ring that it could join with, and that would make it aromatic. Why? Well, let's see. For brevity's sake, I won't fill all of these in. Let me at least indicate where my nitrogens are. And I'll put my hydrogens in, which, as you can see, for one of the nitrogens, the hydrogen is on the S. What? For one of the nitrogens, there is a hydrogen, and it's on an sp2 orbital. Because, again, the lone pair wants to become part of that pi system. So the lone pair would be here. The other nitrogen, though, it is the lone pair that must be pointed off to the side, because that nitrogen already has a double bond.
and you can't have a pi bond and a lone pair
in the same place. So, you have the two pi bonds and one lone pair, that's six electrons, that means it's aromatic. The other question was about this compound, 2-ethylcyclopenta-1,3-diene. And you're told that it's unusually acidic, it has a pKa of 15, but the molecule is not aromatic. Explain why it is so acidic. Well, it's not aromatic, but it wants to be. And that's why it loses its hydrogen. Because once it does lose its hydrogen, the lone pair there can delocalize. Since it delocalizes, you've got six electrons in the ring again. It's cyclic, planar, conjugated, has the right number of electrons. So it's aromatic. To help demonstrate that, you were asked to construct a frost circle and to briefly explain the rules for a frost circle, including how do you determine how many orbitals there are, which ones are antibonding and non-bonding and bonding, and how many electrons do you throw in there. Well, you look at what's in the ring itself to determine the number of electrons, and again, we have two pi bonding pairs of electrons plus the lone pair, so that's six. How many orbitals do we have? Well, it's equal to the number of atoms in the ring. So the reason I put the ethyl group there was to see if I threw any of you off. The ethyl group has nothing to do with this question. It's just the ring. There's five atoms in the ring, so the frost circle is going to be a five-sided figure in it. You have to put one point down at the very bottom of the ring because it corresponds to an orbital with p orbitals that all have the same phase. And as far as which orbitals are bonding, non-bonding, antibonding, we draw a line which would be normal to the tangent, not normal, parallel to the tangent of where that lowest point would be. That part I probably didn't say before, but I remember in office hours people asked me, well, how do you know where the line goes? Well, once you draw that lowest point, the line has to be parallel to the bottom of that circle. Anything below the line is bonding, anything above it is antibonding, anything on the line is non-bonding. So in this specific case, we end up with five molecular orbitals, three of them bonding, two of them antibonding. With the six electrons we have, they only go into bonding orbitals, which confirms it's aromatic, which is why it loses the hydrogen, because it's not aromatic until it loses the hydrogen. Questions on that problem? Now, the other problem that you had on the quiz, that was about butadiene and cyclobutadiene. Those molecular orbital energy diagrams are already in the notes. So, is it all right if I just talk about that problem out loud? And you can refer back to the notes for the pictures of the molecular orbitals. Okay, so for butadiene, there were four orbitals, and they were each different energies. Because remember, for the linear system, each orbital has one more node. So we had 0, 1, 2, and 3 nodes. For the cyclic system, we still have 4 orbitals, but there's only 1 bonding orbital, 2 non-bonding, and then 1 antibonding orbital. In the question, you were told that for the butadiene, the linear one, the single bond that's there is shorter than normal, and you were told that for cyclobutadiene, the single bond there was longer than normal. Why? Well, just to flash up one of the orbitals here for the butadiene case. That lowest energy orbital is one in which all the p orbitals used to represent it have the same phase, which means electrons are spread out over the whole molecule, which helps bring the whole molecule closer together. To put it in a short way, conjugation is what brings the double bonds together,
which is why the single bond there is shorter than it normally should be. Again, that's explained, one, by the fact that we have this distributed orbital, and we only have electrons in bonding orbitals. Where do things go wrong with the cyclobutadiene case? Well, because of the type of node structure we have in these orbitals, two of the orbitals end up non-bonding. But we still have the same number of atoms and the same number of electrons. So whereas we had two double bonds previously, effectively we only have one in the cyclic case. You've pushed electrons that would otherwise be bonding into being non-bonding, which is not favorable. The compound responds by trying to stretch apart. Because the further it stretches, the more those double bonds act like individual double bonds again. And that's why the bond is longer. Now, there was a subpart of the question that asked to explain how did you know which orbitals were bonding, non-bonding, and anti-bonding. And I haven't decided what will constitute an appropriate answer. The answer I was looking for is that bonding is wherever your representations have more favorable overlaps between p orbitals than unfavorable. Which, that's where the happy and the sad faces came from. For antibonding, it would be more unfavorable versus favorable, and for non-bonding, it would be equal. But it is true that bonding orbitals are ones that are lower in energy compared to unbonded atoms, that antibonding is higher in energy compared to unbonded atoms, and that non-bonding is equal in energy to non-bonded atoms. Whether I'll accept that in itself as an appropriate answer, again, that's something I'm going to have to consider over the weekend. Which, by the way, I just want to put this out there as one small way to maybe reduce your grade worry a little bit. Because how many of the lab reports do you not have to do? So that's one little packet of points that is just there, you go, like that. And then there's the notebook check that I never did do. So that's another little small packet of points that, there you go, like that. So whatever your results end up being, you've got that cushion of several dozen points there to help you all out. I'll just put that out there for you to think about. Back to the exam. Third question was to draw structures for molecules. All those named molecules are in the notes. Three more questions. Let me tackle the last one first. I want to at least show you the mechanism, because I know mechanism's an issue. Question? I haven't decided what form of curve they'll be, but I hadn't also moved away from. So let me survive the weekend with that nice little stack of papers. Now, I know we don't have class Monday. That's one issue. But if you all wanted to come to the labs on Monday, either one, for part of the lab, of course, there'll be the chaos of cleanup. And we'll probably do the same thing there we did here, check out first. But while they're doing their lab exam, if you wanted to show up and you had some questions, we could sit there quietly and go over. So if you wanted to come get your papers, you wanted to go over anything, instead of just in office hours, you can come there then, since we don't have that one extra day of class that they have available to them. Yeah? Right. Because I'm going out of town Friday, so besides you all being mad at me, I'm going to be enraged at my own self if I'm having to be on a plane while trying to grade anything other than the final. Which, yes, I'll be grading your finals on a plane, but that's fine because we...
Oh my goodness! Is that because you're worried about my safety so that so they'll get there safely? Is that what it is? I hope that's all that there is to it. Oh, good airline food. Okay. Well, too bad it's not international. Will they still give you all the little free bottles of booze, right? Well, you gotta have something to do. Oh my gosh, have you ever gone like around the globe? Well, some of you have to get here, yes. But those plane flights stink. I mean, 14, 18 hours at one time on a plane, you know, or like the times I've been to India, you get up and you do 11, 12 hours and then touchdown, and okay, you're in a nice airport, but then you got to do it all over again and be up in the, and those planes shake like this when you get up that high. I know. So, when I've been, I've either been to Frankfurt or I've been to Seoul, to the Incheon airport there. So. Anyways, back to the review part. Let's do the mechanism. And I guess the other questions, the one about orthopara and such, you can get those from the recording from sections 1 and 2. Which I think they didn't do any smack talking about you all, so. Well, when we talk, we don't think what we say about sections 1 and 2 in here, do we? I'm just saying. And nor would they necessarily think that you're going to be listening in on them. I made a comment to that effect at some point. They all went, oh. Tall Yuen. Reacting with aluminum trichloride and purple chloride. Well, it's going to be the chloride that reacts first with the aluminum trichloride to make a complex. That's what effectively makes our electrophile. Because after it substitutes, chloride can come off of carbon, which makes a carbocation, which makes an unfavorable carbocation, which hydride shifts. If I hear any, oh, at the moment, I know what was forgotten, which is the fact that a hydride shift will occur here.
Is there plus G-turn with that?
You shouldn't give me this, because then I'm just going to start using it, aren't I? So now we have the single carbocation that gets attacked by toluene. The question did not specifically state to show all possible products, but it is technically true that you're going to get two of them. Ortho and para. If you only showed one, it's fine, because again, I didn't tell you to show both. But at this point, chloride would remove a hydrogen, which would cause benzene to be reformed. That's it. You got a beautiful day today, so maybe go out and enjoy it for a few seconds before you go dive into your chem books.
One more question.
Okay.
The Swan diagram.
Yeah.
That lone pair should be in the vicinity of that orbital. Right?
This lone pair is trying to be shown with this SPT orbital, and this lone pair is trying to be shown
in the P orbital.
So one's in, one is in the ring, one is not in the ring.